And it is part of the European Green Deal. Perhaps you have heard about it. The Green Deal is a set of policies that the European Commission launched in order to become climate neutral by 2050. These are the objectives of the Climate Pact. The first one is to raise awareness of climate issues and EU actions related to climate change. We also want to encourage climate action and catalyze engagement, and we're aiming to connect citizens and organizations to act on climate and help each other to accomplish their climate goals. And here you can also read our motto. Wait, I can see now that the slides are not changing.
No, the slides
Is it?
are quiet. So if you want me to
Oh.
change them, I can do that.
Okay. Yeah. I was.
Shall I change them?
Now, okay, sorry, it was not signed. Yeah, could you change them to the
Yes. Which number? It's
number five?
okay.
Okay. Yes, the next
Okay,
one.
sorry.
Yeah, okay, thank you. So here you can read the objectives of the Climate Pact, which are again raising awareness of climate issues, encouraging climate action, and connecting citizens. And as you can see, all of these objectives are very related to communications, and that is why the Climate Pact is managed in the European Commission in the communications team of the Directorate General for Climate Action. That's where we work. And yes, you can go to the next slide.
Okay.
And I will show you the.
It takes a little time.
Yeah, that's fine. The three priority areas of the Climate Pact are climate policy and action on the ground. So we focus on climate action at the local level. Then also adaptation to the climate impacts, because climate change is already here and we are seeing the impacts of it every day in Spain. The high temperatures and the droughts are some of the most important impacts that we're seeing now. And the pact also wants to communicate about the importance of having a just green transition. So that means that people who are already vulnerable to climate change won't be even more affected by climate policies. Next slide, please. So, how do we communicate about all of this? We do it through our products, but also through a big network of Climate Pact ambassadors. We have over 800 Climate Pact ambassadors, and they are individuals who want to lead by example and inspire others to take climate action. They share messages to their networks about the importance of climate change and try to encourage climate action. And they also organize and participate in different events at local level, but also national and European. And the reasoning why we have these Climate Pact ambassadors is that it is easier for people to relate to someone that they know than to have an institution like the European Commission explaining to them why climate change is important and why they should care about it. So we thought that with this approach, it would be easier to communicate about the importance of climate change. Well, I'm saying we, but of course we don't decide on the Climate Pact. This was an initiative that was set up by the President of the European Commission, and then now we're trying to implement it. These are some of the next slide, please. So, as I mentioned in the last point, the Climate Pact ambassadors, they organize activities to try to encourage climate action in their cities, in their regions. And here you can see some of the examples of those activities that they do. For example, they often organize workshops at local schools, or they also create social media content, as you can see on the top right. They organize other types of activities like climate walks or peer parliaments. Those are citizen engagement activities to communicate in an easier way the, again, the importance of climate change, but also to discuss what policies could be implemented in each city or region. And yeah, they are free to decide how they want to contribute to the pact, but we ask them to contribute by doing three concrete actions related to...
Oops, the camera went off.
No worries.
Sorry about that. Oh, no. Wait, it now changed. Real quick.
I think there is a technical issue. Can you hear us?
Yes.
Should I continue without camera?
Yes. We can hear you.
Okay. Sorry about that.
No worry.
Try to see.
I can try to fix it while you present.
Okay. So yeah, as I was saying, the European Climate Pact ambassadors, they are free to decide how they want to contribute to the pact. But we ask them to do these three concrete actions. Next slide, please.
Okay.
And in the Climate Pact, we recently launched as well a partnership with organizations. We work with nonprofit organizations that are aligned with the pact values, and we ask them for the same, to encourage citizens to take climate action and to engage in our events and collaborate with ambassadors at national and regional level. We thought that this way, the activities that ambassadors co-create with partners can have a bigger impact if they have an association behind them that can perhaps support them in logistics, in reaching out to more people, etc. Next slide, please.
Okay. No worries. We are here. Okay, yes, that's it.
Okay. And the partners also organize similar activities. And here we have an example of a training for local administrators in Milan, in Italy, that one of our partners, the research department of the Venice region, organized. Next slide.
Okay.
Okay, and so for you to understand a bit better how the Climate Pact works, as I mentioned before, the Climate Pact is an initiative that was set up by the European Commission. So it is us, the European Commission, who sets the priorities of the European Climate Pact, and we decide which is the direction that the project will be taking. So this is slightly affected by the political scenario, for example, and now that the European Commission is entering a new term, perhaps you know that we had European elections this year in June, and now we will have a new European Commission starting soon, next month or perhaps in December, and they decide what are our priorities, and then the people who are mobilizing the pact community and coordinating is the Climate Pact Secretariat, and that is a consortium of three consultancies that we work with. I guess you might be familiar with this type of setup if you study public relations, but we have three companies that coordinate the pact, and then because the pact aims to be present in each of the EU member states, we have country coordinators, and they are organizations that are implementing the pact at a national level. So they are in touch with the Climate Pact ambassadors and partners of that country, and they organize events for them. And then we also work with public relations agencies in each of the member states. And these public relations agencies, they try to communicate about the pact, give more visibility to the pact in the national media. And the country coordinator that we have in Spain, it is an organization based in Barcelona. It's called Ecoservace, and our PR agency in Spain is called Atrevia. I believe they're based in Madrid, but I think they also have offices in Barcelona and in other cities. Next slide, please.
Okay.
And to give you an example of the activities that the country coordinators do, here we have three activities in EU countries. And the first one was talk about tools to handle difficult and emotional climate conversations. And this took place here in Brussels. Oh, I didn't mention that, but we are based in Brussels. We work here because this is where the European Commission headquarters are. Then the second activity is a national event that took place in Bulgaria. And the third one is the citizen engagement activity in Estonia. So as you see, the Climate Pact is really linked to organizing events. And now let's dive into the communication side. Next slide, please, of the Climate Pact. And just to give you a flavor of what we do in terms of communications, we communicate with these five different channels. We have our monthly newsletter that is published towards the end of the month. Anyone can subscribe to the newsletter. You can subscribe if you're interested. And in there, you will see some developments of the pact in the previous month. What are some of the events that we are organizing? Because we have events that are just for the pact community, but we also have others that are open to everyone. For example, the last week we hosted our first Climate Action Academy webinar. That is an academy that we have set up to hopefully spread the knowledge about how to take climate action. And in this first webinar, we talked about behavioral change. How can you encourage people to change their behavior towards more sustainable behaviors that take into account the climate change? So that's an example of what we do and what we communicate in the newsletter. But we also include, for example, activities from the Climate Pact ambassadors or partners that we find interesting and that we think our subscribers would like to know. We also publish articles usually on a monthly basis. Sometimes we publish two in a month. And the articles are usually also connected with the Climate Pact community. We'll always try to feature them in the articles. And they are related to different climate action or sustainability topics. For example, we are hosting an event tomorrow on citizen-led climate action, and we will be writing an article about this. So this article is about one of our events, but we also published an article over the summer on how to make music events more sustainable. So it can be sometimes focused on the pact, but also broader. And the third channel that I included is our website. You can find everything related to the pact in our website, and in the QR code there on the corner, you can scan it and check out our website. And then the two other channels that we will be exploring a bit further in the presentation are our social media channels. We communicate through DG Klima's Instagram, X, LinkedIn, and Facebook accounts. So we use the account from the European Commission to communicate about the pact. We don't have separate accounts for that. And then also the communication campaigns, and I will be explaining to you two of them now. Next slide, please. Okay, so I think it didn't change yet, right?
Yes,
okay,
right now,
so
yes.
The communication campaigns, the next slide.
Okay.
As a Climate Pact, we occasionally hold communication campaigns to accomplish the pact's goals of encouraging more people to take climate action. And two examples of communication campaigns that we have ongoing now are the Climate Pact Photo Competition and the call for Climate Pact Ambassadors. Next, please. So okay. The Climate Pact Photo Competition, we launched it towards the end of April this year. And it was a photo competition that aimed to raise awareness about climate change and its impacts. And it also aimed to inspire and encourage behavioral change by incentivizing and empowering people via these pictures. So basically, people were sending us pictures of the climate action that they are taking in their city or in their homes, in their communities. And they were sending the pictures with a short text that was answering the question that is there on the slide. What action have you taken or has been taken around you to make your home, community, or city in the EU more climate friendly? And why does this make you proud or passionate? And then, so this is the photo competition that we run. The submissions were open from end of April until end of June. And the prize that we were offering to the 10 winners was an invitation to the next European Climate Pact annual event that will take place in March 2025. The pictures will also be featured in a photo exhibition at COP29. This is the United Nations Conference on Climate Change that will take place in Azerbaijan in November this year. And we will organize another photo exhibition here in the European Commission headquarters. And the four main winners will be featured in an international media campaign. And we also give all the winners a certificate saying that they won the competition. Next slide, please.
Okay.
So these have been the steps of this campaign. First, the submissions period. And well, on the right, you can see the communication activities that we did to communicate about each step, right? So when we opened submissions, what we did was to, of course, create a new subpage in our website, but also send this photo competition information to our mailing list that includes many other like similar initiatives or organizations that can help us spread the message. We included it in our newsletter, we posted it on our social media, and we also do events in person, as I told you before. So we were communicating about it in events. And then once we had closed the submissions, we did a short list of the best 40 pictures, and then the public could vote what was their favorite one out of those 40. So again, we communicated about this. And then the next step was to announce the winners. And we did that last month. And now the campaign will end with a media campaign that will start running actually this Wednesday. And it will be running until November, but I'm going to explain you more on that in the next slides. Next, please.
Okay.
Okay, so this is an example of our social media post to communicate about the photo competition. It's a reel, but here I didn't include the video, just a screenshot. So yeah, first we opened the submissions and we did around 4 or 5 posts to remind our audience that the photo competition is there and that the submissions are open. Next, please.
Okay.
Then it was the public vote period. And again, we posted on our channels. The one on the bottom is also a reel, but I didn't include it either, but it was showing really quickly the 40 winning, well, shortlisted pictures, and then people could decide what was their favorite. And I also included here a screenshot of an article that was published about the photo competition public vote. And so the process to get to this article is that we open the public vote. Well, before that, we communicate to our country coordinators and public relations agencies that we mentioned before. And we tell them, please spread the word in your country. And then the Spanish public relations agency, they sent a press note to many media in Spain. And then different media picked it up. I think it was picked up by 7 or 8 media, because also we were lucky that this was happening late July or beginning of August, because at that time there's not many news. But the newspapers need to continue publishing, so they picked up our photo competition. And this one in particular, they focused it on a Valencian picture that was shortlisted. And yes, that's just an example, but like this article you could find also in a similar one in Slovenia, in Estonia, in Germany, or in other EU member states. Next one, please. Then we close the public vote, and a month later we published the photo competition winners. And we published this carousel on Instagram with all the pictures, but you can find them on our website as well. And next slide. And now to continue promoting the winning pictures, because that is what is most important for us. So for people to see concrete actions on how others are trying to contribute to fighting climate change. So that's what we want to focus on. And that is what this media campaign that we're running will be doing. So for this photo competition, we partnered with Deutsche Welle. Perhaps you know it, but Deutsche Welle is the public broadcaster in Germany. And they do a lot of content in English, but also in Spanish, in different languages, and they are an international media outlet. So we thought that they were fitting for this campaign. And, well, our contractor gave us some different options of media that would work well for this campaign. Then we picked Deutsche Welle, and they gave us the idea of doing 4 videos on the winners of the photo competition and also an article. So last week we received the first video. You can only see a screenshot here because it's not out yet. So it's still secret until Wednesday. That's when they will be publishing it on social media, and it will also be in our social media. But this video interviews one of the winners, and in there he explains what's the action that he took. And in this case, the winner, he's a Finnish man called Jussi, and his action was to protect a forest in Finland. So he got this forest that he really loves to be a protected natural area, and that way he can ensure that this forest won't be cut down, and it will keep its biodiversity and so on. So that is one of the videos, but we will have 3 more coming up from Wednesday until mid-November. So that is the media campaign for the photo competition. Next slide. And okay. I will just give you some data on how this photo competition performed. We received over 300 entries, so more than 300 people sent us their pictures. And in the public vote, we received 4,250 votes. Our website saw a big increase of, so it's multiplicated by 8 its visits. And there were more than 280 media products. So like the one I showed you before on the Spanish picture in the shortlist. And here on the right, you can see 2 of the winning pictures. The one on the bottom is the one featured in the video that I just mentioned from Finland. And then the one on the top is a picture in Germany showing solar panels. So this was a bit of an overview in our of our photo competition, and now let's move on to the other communications campaign that we're running. Next slide, please.
Yes. Okay.
Just very briefly, because I think I already took a lot of time to explain the photo competition. So as I explained you at the beginning of the presentation, the Climate Pact relies on its Climate Pact ambassadors to encourage citizens to take climate action and to spread climate awareness, etc. And the way we build this network of Climate Pact ambassadors is by opening a call to become Climate Pact ambassador once a year. And now we just opened the call in October, 1st of October, and it will be open the whole month. And people who are interested, they can apply. If you're interested, you can also check our website and apply. You just need to write some information about yourself and what would be your three commitments to the Climate Pact if you become ambassador. And well, for us, in terms of communication, this is a very important moment because we need to make sure that the Climate Pact reaches all our new potential ambassadors. So we are trying to communicate about it in all of our channels. And I included here a video, a reel that we posted recently about the ambassador call. And this is one that was published in our social media, but for example, the Italian account of the European Commission published a different one with one of the ambassadors. So we often include the ambassadors in our social media content, but this is something that Elias will cover now. Next, please.
Yes, thank you so much, Mar. Slight technical issues now with this transition, but
it's fine.
Could you once again just confirm that you can hear me?
Well, we are in slide number 25.
Yes, you can hear me?
Oh, and I think we can. I think the camera might work again.
Oh. Okay, so let's just try not to move it much, and then if it's, but yes, thanks a lot, Mar. And now I will talk a bit more about the practicalities of how it works to deal with the social media creation of packed content. I'm gonna run you through the process a bit, our thinking, but also like challenges and some lessons learned, and then we can take questions on that. So if you go to the next slide, please.
Number 25 or 26?
25.
Oh, yes, we are on 25 now, right now.
Yes, perfect. it all starts for us with our objectives, so the ones that Mar has already mentioned. So we don't create content for the sake of creating content. We don't try to get onto certain trends just to create engagement. But our content is really in that sense quite institutional, that it's guided by our three objectives. So raising awareness about the pact and about EU climate action, encouraging action in the Climate Pact community, and connecting with people, broadening our community, but also connecting further with people already in the Climate Pact community. And so based on that, the content we create for social media is therefore simply content that is based on another packed product. So a packed product can be something such as an article. For example, Mar mentioned that we have basically monthly articles on different themes that are topical at the moment, but it can also be events that we're doing. It can be other communication products, such as some of the campaigns that Mar has shown you. And then based on these this material, we then make a social media product. And so when making a social media product, what are the steps? What do we think about? I think as communication students, this will not be completely new to you, but it's just also to show how it works from an institutional perspective. So the first of all, the first step is knowing our audience. So of course, we have a very broad audience, being an institution and a community that wants to include all interested European citizens, but still some products are better suited for some audiences. So for example, I mean, this is a very clear example I have on screen for International Youth Day. We wanted to talk about our young ambassadors and what we do in terms of youth engagement. Then of course, the audience is mostly young people, and we will adapt the product more to suit the language and the format, doing something a bit more quick, a bit more trendy, for a younger audience, involving young PACT ambassadors, mostly doing a product that is more suitable for Instagram, for example. If we want to do a product about an event, that might be a bit more institutional for the broader PACT community, then we will make a product that is maybe a bit more suitable for LinkedIn. And if we want to make a product for the broader public, then we'll have to think about like how can we create this product so that it attracts as broad of an interest as possible. But with that being said, and this goes for all audiences, after we know what sort of audience we're communicating to, then we need to think of the message. And so Mara has already done a fantastic job, I would say, at explaining what the PACT is, in a as clear way as possible. But that being said, I think you all notice the PACT is complicated. It's complex. It's a subdivision of what we do at the Commission, and people already don't really know what we're doing at the Commission. So what is the PACT exactly? It's complex. It's something that's already is not ideal to communicate around. And that's why we need to make the message as clear as possible. Because if the message is not clear, then the interest will not be there. And so our second step is to make a message as clear as possible. For example, if the article is about summer reads, as the example in on the slide here, or as Mar mentioned earlier, we had an article about sustainable festival experiences. We make sure to make the article and the subsequent social media product clear. For example, lists, easy reads. So, you know, we list the 6 books that we recommend for summer. We have a listicle article with like 5 clear tips that viewers can immediately see, okay, which are the 5 tips? And then we base the social media product on these tips, make a carousel showing 5 easy tips that people can scroll through, remember, and not have to sort of understand a more complex background for this. But then all of this work is absolutely, I would say, lost if we don't have a good visual. And this can happen often, that like we put a lot of work into articles or content, but then we have a subpar visual that performs well and that we can see impacts the readership. It impacts the numbers of the performance of our other products. So optimizing the visuals also, because we know our audience, we know what visuals we wanna are maybe better suited. Because we know our clear message, we know how to incorporate that message into the visuals and the format that I talked about earlier. And so then hopefully we come out with a visual that works well for the product. And then last but not least, once we have created this product, I mean, the PACT is, again, a community. And that community exists not only, you know, in our minds and in our documents, it exists on social media. We try to interact with people that have questions. We try to create these sort of engagements in a way that we might not for other corporate and institutional communication on social media, because we want to make people feel like that they are part of something. And if they feel that they are part of the community, they're also more likely to take interest in our products, engage with our products. And that is, of course, the final goal of this. So that's a bit the process. And if you go to the next slide, please.
Okay.
Going through a bit the challenges and lessons for this. These are some of the challenges that and lessons learned from doing social media as a big institution. And some of you, I can imagine, will maybe in the future find yourself working in a similar environment or similar organization or working with similar campaigns. So this is a bit our experience from that. As you can imagine, it has pros and cons. And that's what I'm going to go through here. And so one of the most sort of typical challenges that's often raised is the validation process. So here, as a big institution, our posts often require multiple reviews and approvals, and both from us working with the contractors that Mar mentioned, but also sometimes from our hierarchy. So this means that we have a bit of a slower process, not as agile and fast paced, especially compared to maybe what's expected on social media, where many of our, so to say, like competing accounts will be fast, latching onto trends, latching onto being quick to react, basically. But we're a bit constrained in that sense. We're also restricted with what type of content we can produce or how we can communicate about it. If there are sensitive topics, legal considerations, you know, policies that we have to keep in mind, we're a bit more limited in that sense. And then there is the risk of public scrutiny. I mean, it's a low risk, but it's a risk that exists. This is not, you know, we're not running a influencer account where all their views are their own. We have to make sure that everything we communicate aligns with the institutional message, and that anything that we say on our communication channels could be taken up by media, it could be like misinterpreted, and it could face a backlash. I mean, backlash is a big word, but still something that really definitely limits us or makes sure that we need to work extra carefully on how we communicate. And I would say that all in all, these challenges, I mean, they also confine us to a certain type of social media products. And now you've seen quite a few of our social media posts during this this presentation. And some of you might think, well, I mean, these look neat, but they're also a bit boring. And to be completely frank, that's of course true. But those are in a way also the price that we have to pay for communicating in a more institutional and careful way. But I think that there are valuable lessons from our way of communicating and doing social media that are valuable for also if you work in sort of less restricted ways. So one thing that we take very seriously because we have to is the strategic planning. So as I said, all our communication stems from our objectives. So having objectives, having a structured approval process makes that we know basically what type of content we will create. We know what type of content we won't create. We're never in the we're never unsure about that, and it creates a very clear planning process for us that we know who's doing what. We know that what the role of the contractor is, and this just makes our life a lot easier for social media. And then consistency in messaging. This is something that I think is always important in communication. But when you communicate more freely, sometimes I think it's very easy for the consistency to get lost because you want to maybe latch on to certain trends. You want to communicate in a certain way depending on the product. But the consistency in messaging that we have, because we're an institution and we have to abide by those restrictions, it also creates this sense in our audience that they know us, or like us as an institutional communicator. They recognize our tone. They recognize our visuals, and I think this is an asset that over time our audience gets to know us in a way, and gets to recognize, well, this is a packed product because it has this visual identity, has this tone, and it also like strengthens this sense of community. So those are two valuable lessons that I think can definitely be used no matter what type of communication you work with, but definitely not least if you're going to work in the future with this type of more institutional or corporate communication. So that is it for my part, because also I wanted to give you some time for questions, which I think is often the most interesting part for students and these sort of groups. Let's see if we can get our camera on. We're not sure if that we're going to make that work, but
this one.
Yeah, we can put that on. But yes, so next slide, please.
Okay, we are on slide 27.
Yes. And there you'll find more information about where you can find out more about the pact. You can find us on social media, which platforms we're active on. So if you have any questions, don't hesitate to reach out. You're going to get these slides after this this class. So please feel free to reach out there and to follow us on social media. And with that, I think we can go on to the Q&A. If you change to the last slide, please.
Okay. Thank you. Well, we see the last slide. Thank you for your attention. Thank you. Well, thank you very much for the time that you are about to hear a big applause.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for the time that you have invested to create this presentation. And now it's time for questions, or if the students would like to interact or raise some questions about the topic that we have been talking about. I don't know if, can you see us?
Yes, a bit.
Okay, well. In fact, we are about to start the questions. If you have some question or if you would like to make a comment, as you have already heard, Mar speaks Spanish. So in this case, if you want to ask her some question in Spanish, feel free to do that.
Any volunteer?
Not everybody at the same time, please. Okay, we will start for the questions here in this room, and if there are no questions in this room, we will move to the questions in the online channel. I don't know if someone who is connected would like to make some question. In that case, I will ask you please to raise your hand where on posa participar, who wants to ask some questions, please click this hand. Yes, I will change one moment the... Okay, I will have to, one moment, please. Okay, well, no questions here. Some questions here? No? Well, I have just a little question that I think that can be interesting for the audience, and is regarding the process of validation of a post, for example. More or less, how many people has to validate the information you're about to publish? I mean, I guess that when you are preparing some publication for different social media networks, you create a sample, or I guess you create you have a document in which you write the expected entrances that you will create. But the question is, how many people more or less have to check that the content that you are planning to publish will finally be published?
Yes. Thank you. So
do you understand the question? Yes. Okay, sorry. Please,
yes.
Come on.
No, so I would say for the average post, it would start exactly as you said, by a concept from the contractor. And they show this concept to me and to one of my colleagues. Then either I validate it or we both validate it together. That might depend a bit on the nature of the post. Then there's a back and forth between us and the contractor making the post. And then once the post is ready, we show it for final validation to one of the product managers. And then they give it the final approval. So that to me, I would say, is not a lot of steps, but this is for your average post. If the post is a bit more sensitive about a topic that might be politically sensitive, then it can be that we already at the concept stage need to get validation from a project manager or from someone else working higher up the chain. So an extra step of validation already in the concept, then it goes back again, then it goes like, you know, back and forth with the contractor. And then for the final approval, once the post is ready, it once again can go up the chain. And with packed content, mostly it only goes one step up the chain, so one extra approval. But I can say that for some of the social media content that we make outside of the packed, that usually is a bit more political, it can have max, I mean, like I've had four different people validate posts. And then of course you can have three people that give the green light, but then a fourth one that is not happy. And then you have to go down again all the way and then get through the validation process again. This is of course rare, this is exceptional, but just to say that in the worst cases, it can be that much. And of course then people are busy, people have a lot of other things. Social media is not always the main priority of people that give these political validations, and so it can delay the product for multiple days. But again, this is the, you know, worst case scenario.
Well, thank you very much for this insightful response, because well, here in class students are told, well, the I guess the main patterns and things to take into consideration, but the thing is that when we see a real case, it it gives like more an extra insight about what's going on and things that perhaps the public is not aware. So it's another question. And do you have some questions about that? No, I will just add a little question and something related to that is regarding the visual coherence of the contents that you publish. I mean, when the designer or someone has to create a post or create an infography or whatever, do they have some rules or some aspects to consider in order to make sure that the person who will see this post understands that this information or this piece of information belongs to the company?
Yes. So we have a visual identity. That is, I mean, it's the packed visual identity more broadly. So it applies to all packed products, so everything from the website, our articles, fact sheets, any or
the photo competition,
everything, yes, and also social media. And so that visual identity, first we worked on together with the contractors, it was approved, and then they use that, and we would say we're really quite consistent with always using this. And I would even say strict, but in a positive sense, that we're quite strict, because once again, if we're consistent with our visual identity, just as if we're consistent with our tone and our messaging, it creates or it amplifies, it strengthens this sense of like, well, this is a social media, this is a packed product that we can recognize from afar, from like very quickly recognize that this is the Climate Pact. And it also strengthens this sense of community that like this is something that we do together.
Okay, well, thank you very much for the time and your explanations. More questions here? No? Okay. Well, so please, another applause for them, and thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Would you like to add something? Fine.
Yes. Okay. No, just thank you for listening to us. We hope it was interesting, and don't hesitate to reach out if you have any other questions later, or yeah, just you can check our website, see if you're interested in becoming an ambassador, because now we have our call for ambassadors open. So yeah, I think that's it from our side. Thank you again and have a nice day.
Yeah, thank you, and good luck with your
studies. Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much. Good luck with your studies.